Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. Your Peugeot car or van might benefit from a free software upgrade. For more information and to find out if this applies to your vehicle, call the lads in Slattery's Garage, puck on 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.
Thanks, Pat, and welcome back to the final hour of Tip Today. Now, it being a Friday, it's time for our Friday panel, and I'm glad to be joined in the studio by Alison Devere Hunt of Cashel Mart. Mark Small is with us, Naval Architect Mediator, and Pat Mullally is with us on the panel for the first time, former P&T worker, aircom worker, all those things.
Oh, just retired, finally.
And we just found out as well that you put yourself forward for the Borough Council and for the county back in
1979.
Yeah.
That was a tough year. It was a tough year. Petrol strikes. It was the year of the European Parliament elections as well. I'll always remember that the three candidates that were run with me were Carrie Atchison, Lord of Mercenham, Tom Ambrose, Lord of Mercenham, and Philly Halloran from Kilsheelan, and myself were on the ticket.
Wow.
But we were up against Sean Tracy. That time there was the dual mandate. And if you look for the local council elections or the local borough elections, it was anti-Fianna Fáil, anti-government, because of the petrol strike. But I also remember Philly Halloran, as I mentioned before. Philly had a garage in Kilsheelan, so he used to be able to give out a drop of petrol to those people that were giving him a vote. Unfortunately, I wasn't tied into any Maxol or Texaco at the time, but that was it.
But you'd like to have become involved, would you?
I would have liked to become involved, yeah. But then as I got married, I met my wife then in 1979, got married in 1980, and then it was a case of looking after a family, and just didn't do it.
You were asked to take part, I think. Were you, Mark, at one stage?
Yeah, I did, yeah. At one stage there was a question asked, and I talked to some people, and I have the utmost respect. It doesn't matter what party, what politics you are. I have the utmost respect for anyone who puts themselves forward.
I thought you would love it, the cut and thrust, and you'd be very good at it as well.
I think I'd upset too many people on a regular basis.
Well, you already do that.
I think the abuse that they get, the things they're expected to put up with, you know, that are way outside the pale. Look what's gone on now with demonstrations outside of houses and the intimidation. I think there's no respect for people who have views. I mean, my always thing was, if you have a strong view, you know, advocate for it and do it, fine. But don't make it personal. I disagree with people's politics in all walks of life, but let's have an open and honest discussion about it.
It's about the politics.
I have a fantastic interest in politics, but my God, I wouldn't put myself on it.
You contemplated it, Alison.
I did. I've been asked, say, for the last number of elections, national, say, I've only been asked once by a party to go local. And
That's cross-party, is it? A couple of different...
Number of parties. And I always was like, maybe next time. And this time I actually genuinely did consider it. And I'm so glad that I didn't follow through.
Why?
Well, I have a three-year-old son running a business. I just don't know where I'd get the time. I think, to be honest, my son would be missing out. Mm. The business would be missing out, you know, and they're fundamentals in my life that I need to. And I think, to be honest, sometimes you can do a lot by not being actually in a position. You can probably do more, you can say more.
It's amazing, but there's always people on to us. And I see just the very first text into us, the panel text, says, I'd like to see Alison run for the election. So there you go. So a lot of people would like to see you run.
Well, look, I think, to be honest, my views, I consider myself a very straight person, and I think I have the same or similar views as a lot of people, and I have a level of empathy there that I understand what's going on, and you know, I'm not happy, and I think most of the country aren't happy. And I think people are extremely frustrated, and there's nothing being done. And I think, you know, it's like Micheál Martin saying about the immigration, and we don't understand the complexities of it. we do understand the complexities of it.
Very patronising.
And I think they don't understand the complexities of it. And that's where the issue is. And they have sat on their hands since the start of this. And that is why we are where we are now.
Senator Garrett Hearn said to me this morning, Pat, that he figured that and fair play to him, he had a nice little dig at me. He said that what he was hearing on the doorsteps was quite different to what I'm hearing here on the programme in terms of people's priorities, because I gather that people are very concerned about asylum seekers and immigration and the like. He says that that's not what he's hearing on the doorstep. What about your view on that, Pat?
My view would be that a lot of the people say that would be saying it, coming back to you and texting back to you, or those are behind keyboard warriors, and they just want to get it off their chest, whatever. But when you meet people on the door, they have other priorities rather than that. It's just something that's going to affect them. Maybe it's the road down the tarn, the road, or the potholes down the road, or the ditches are not being cut. These are the local issues that are coming up in the local elections. Right, you have the MEP, what they call it, parliamentarians going around looking for they're talking about Europe. So the asylum seekers don't come up in the local election. I don't think they come up inside the local election unless that they're living next door to me or next door to whatever the case may be. They might say, well, are they going to open that building inside there for asylum seekers? And they're listening to social media and they're looking at what's happening inside there. And I say to Alison there, for any girl that's standing for election, and not being patronising or sexist, good, bad or indifferent, but it's a tough number for a lady to go doing it.
Why is it tougher for
a woman?
I
just saw today on the paper there that Lisa Chambers was stalked. You know, there was two Social Democrats putting up posters in Dublin, and a fella came out with a knife to cut him down, and they were scared because there were two women. Now, if there was two men there, would he come out? No, so like this is what's happening. Like, it's a different.
Would you go along with that?
I mean,
priorities depending on where you're going, I suppose.
Yeah, I think. Look, I think it's generally. I think all elections ultimately come. It's all about me. You know, when someone talks about it, it's about them. What is immediate
what's important
to them? What's to them at that point
and
in time?
And their families, I suppose.
And I mean, I'm surprised to hear that Garrett said that that it's not been discussed. I mean, I would have thought it might come up or something, at least a small bit. But I would have thought...
Well, he did say a small bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, the priority... In no way was a priority.
No, I think most people's priority is really close to home. Cost of living and whether or not they can get somewhere to live. And I would suspect that that is probably... Now, and again, I haven't been canvassing. I don't do any of that. But I would think they are the priorities. Yes. As Pat said, if there is asylum seekers or protection people going in next door to you, then that becomes a priority for you now. But I think as an overall thing, the cost of living and implications of that, and actually whether or not people can find rental housing or how that's working, I think that is the main focus of what people would be. Now, it's only my opinion, but I think, Pat, from what I've heard about some, female candidates who are going, my God, do they get some abuse? And it seems to be more... Where the abuse for the men seems to be more directed on a kind of a slightly, it's more at the parties or what they're running for. Yeah. It seems to me is that, and I look at online, I don't know how they put up it, but it seems to be personal, what they're wearing, what they do, things, which has nothing to do with whether or not someone has a good
sexist language. Yeah. Would you go along with that, Alison?
Well, look, I think, to be honest, if you're going to go, you have to be able for all that kind of thing. Look, you could be stalked and you're not running for election.
Yeah.
But should you? This is the thing, should you have to be able to do it?
You know, it's not necessarily going to happen yet. Yeah. Like, to be honest, like, that kind of thing wouldn't bother me. I see myself as a woman living in a man's world, really, and I see myself as an equal and being able to stand up for myself. So, I've often stepped in where men haven't stepped in. So, I don't see that as an issue. And, I think that, women, you have to be able to get past that and you have to be able to just move on with it. There's other things that affect men that don't affect women. So I definitely, if I was being stalked, you'd just be, they have plenty of people going around with them. There's always going to be oddballs, towards men and women.
No matter what business you're in, I suppose. Can I just defend our listeners on something you said, Pat, because you described them as being keyboard warriors. a lot of the people who made very profound points about asylum seeking and about immigration came on air with me, spoke to me, gave me their names. A lot of them will put their names to the commentary on things. So I just have to support people like that. That is not keyboard warriors in the sense of what you see on social media.
Well, I probably agree with you. Yeah, you'd be at the front face. You probably see it yourself. So I won't say otherwise. I'm not privy to the screen that's in front of you.
It's probably just as well, Pat. It's probably just as well. And this is in light, of course, of the number of asylum seekers being accommodated by the state exceeded 30,000 for the first time as the government considers a review of supports available to those who are not in direct provision. They're taking away the tents, Mark.
Yeah.
They're putting up these barriers, but more people are coming in. The NGOs are giving them tents and they're giving them supports. They're arriving, they're looking for somewhere to put up the tent, then they move some. It's chaotic, isn't it?
I mean, look, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you can't defend the chaos. It's absolutely chaos. There's no defending it. I mean, I don't think any politician can stand up and defend where we are now. How we progress from here, it's a bit like we are where we are.
Yes.
We need to figure out. No, again.
Would we progress?
Well, I take. Do you know the lotto numbers for this evening? I think if we do. But look, there's a couple of steps that it would appear to be taken. But I mean, the government seems to be very bad at planning forward. I think, and it doesn't matter what the governments are; they seem to be bad at forward planning. It seems to be reactive. Okay, let's deal with what we have now, or whatever. So, it would appear, and again, the proof will be in the pudding that the new bill that's being put through as part of the European Union. The ability to deport reverse back to member states where people have come to will be easier. So, but we have to follow through. I mean, my criticism of it is not necessarily is that, you know, the processes are there, but I mean, there's been minimal number of deportations. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my view is, okay, if you're allowed to be in the, okay, if you're allowed to come in. If you're allowed to stay. If you're not allowed to come in or to stay, then you should be deported. Back to wherever it is. I mean, wherever you come from or wherever the things in safe countries, I have a totally different view on economic migrants. I mean, I think economic migrants is a very different case to migrants who are fleeing oppression or war. So I think we need to deal with those differently. We have in Ireland, you know, the people are coming to Ireland because of the prosperity of Ireland. Mm. But if they're only coming for economic reasons, well, then no. I mean, I think they shouldn't be allowed to come in unless they come in through the system of...
Because of where we are right now in terms of
we're very prosperous
accommodation.
Yeah, but we're a very prosperous nation. And the perception is in the world out there that Ireland is a very prosperous nation. So that attracts people. But I think we should be saying, no, if an economic reason, that's not a reason to come to Ireland unless you're coming through with work visa and, sponsored as companies. But if you're just arriving on the shore saying, well, I don't like where I live, and because I can't earn a living, you're going, well, sorry, go back. That's not our problem.
What would you do now, Alison? I mean, you know, we are where we are. It's chaotic.
And to be honest, they were warned. They were warned for so long.
Yes.
And, you know, they just, oh, no, we need to bring in more. You know, we need to be humanitarian, this, that and the other. We need to enforce the laws that we already have. Like when Michael McNamara, say, spoke with Helen McEntee there last week.
That was a car crash.
Oh, my God. Like, to be honest, 4 deportations.
Yeah.
Like, everything was done. You know, it was a straight road and they just completely ignored it. And that's, you know, I can see why Irish people are so frustrated. 14,000 homeless Irish. And, you know, you hear adverts on the radio. You see it all around about how local authorities are looking for housing for immigrants. Politicians are always speaking about housing for immigrants. Our own have been forgotten. And that is where a huge part of the issue is. And we're flooding the country with unvetted men.
But
I think I have to take it. Unvetted men, I think, is something that it's a very much a derogative term. Unvetted men is something that I take issue with.
But it's a fact. It's not derogative.
But any man who comes into the country, by your definition, is unvetted. If someone comes here on holidays, they're unvetted.
I'm talking about IPAs.
No, but you said unvetted men. So if we're talking about unvetted men, you're saying any man who comes in, and I take exception to that being a man, that any man who comes into this country is on your definition, unvetted.
Well, sorry, I should have said IPAs before that.
So then if they're coming in unvetted, every single person on that basis is coming unvetted because you cannot go back. If they're fleeing war or oppression, how are you going to vet them?
Mark, as a man that's done an awful lot of travelling yourself, I'm sure you've been to Australia. You are vetted when you go in.
Hang on. If you're coming from a country where you've no passport, you're coming in.
You're not allowed in.
No, you do. You can seek asylum in Australia on the same basis that. Now what happens is they take in, they put you in a island off on the north coast, but you can still come in, and seek protection. But if you're coming from a country, let's say if someone's coming from North Korea, okay, you're not going to go back to North Korea and ask them, has this person committed a crime? Because the North Koreans won't care. So it's not possible to actually vet people who are coming from war and oppression.
Before I go to bed, do you want to answer that?
Well, to be honest, it's like the Georgian MP speaking out there recently saying Ireland is taking our problem. We don't have as many problems here because they are unvetted IPA men. And you can take umbrage to it all you like, Mark, but they are the facts. And to be honest, you know, what's the old saying about...
What's the crime rate then of unvetted men?
Just let Alison...
You know, why haven't we got men? Why haven't we got, say, women and children? The percentage of women and children coming in are small. And you're going to look for, why haven't we got statistics on it, is it? Because we're not allowed to take statistics on foreign nationals. No.
No, hang on. The crimes committed, the persons of crimes committed...
Yeah, are not taken on ethnicity.
All
they
right.
are taking... Look at... Oh, sorry, Fran, if I can just finish quickly. If you look at the Dutch, if you look at, say, their statistics, then you'll see the percentage
Is that the crime statistics? Yes, which they do publish, in fact. Pat, just you're listening to the two lads there having... a frank exchange of views. What are you making of that?
You want me to advocate between the two of them. To be quite honest with you, Frank, the way I look at it is that we have to have something in place, and I do agree with Mark as regards the bill that's going through the European Parliament at the moment, is that there's a lot of landmass between us and Somalia and between us and Nigeria.
Is this the asylum pact?
The asylum pact, yes. Yeah. And there's an awful landmass between us. They're not coming direct from Somalia, straight all around the coast, and they're coming up and landing in Kerry. They're going through land, European land. Mm. And where they first come into a European country, they are at that stage, they're held in a centre, a processing centre, and they're actually photographed, and as I said before, they're fingerprinted, and then they're checked for diseases or whatever the case may be. And if they may be put into an asylum while they're waiting for it, and if they escape from that, which invariably they may escape from it, they go across the country. And if you have a database here in Ireland that sees where these, when they put in their fingerprints or whatever the case, comes up, this is
so
Mohammed Malali if they're coming from.
You're satisfied that this new legislation would help?
I think it would help, yes. Yeah. No, I definitely would. We need something, but we don't have anything at the moment.
All right, OK. I swore I wasn't going to spend a whole lot of time at this today, but there you go. Let me just take a break. We leave the lads calm down. We'll be back in just a moment.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Welcome back to our Friday panel. I've negotiated a truce.
Okay, yeah, we're all happy again.
That's what you're calling it, Fran.
You're better than the UN, I'd say.
Oh my. All right, let us move on to something else that's rather controversial at the moment, which is Bambi Thug. It became the first Irish act to qualify for the Eurovision Song Contest final since 2018, and the performance of the alternative song Doomsday Blue at the semi-finals on Tuesday. It won one of those coveted places, but not without a huge amount of controversy about the sexuality of Bambi Thug, about the nature of the performance piece and how it incorporated satanic imagery and all of that kind of thing, and also of course the whole debate then about Israel and the Israel contestant last night getting into the final as well with the public vote, but a lot of booing and protest in the auditorium where she was concerned as well. Pat, you want to take this first of all? Are you a Eurovision fan?
Not a good fan or a big fan of the Eurovision. I would watch it. I love the Saturday night one, the final.
Yes.
Ireland, Dupont. I like to see the voting, to see what way the... Can we guess where the votes are coming from?
The block voting.
When the block voting came in, yeah. I lost interest completely in it. And I was absolutely astonished last night. Now, Israel, the Israel song was a good song. Mm. She'd done a good job in it, yeah. under the circumstances. But I was amazed that the public vote voted her in. I was amazed, because there's such... controversy all over Europe and all over
pro-Palestinian
or whatever the case may be. I was astonished with that. But going back to our own song, looking at Bambi Tokers, I can't say herself, can we? We just say that they had a very good song. Yes. I'll put it that way to you. And the Eurovision Song Contest, I think it should be called Eurovision Art Contest. Or craft contest.
Because it's become that.
It's become that. It's now the pyrotechnics on Tuesday night were absolutely fantastic. Mm. You know, now the only thing about it, I would say that this is what made Bambi Tug's song so good, because the acting on stage, the way she performed her song, she was slick, she was good. There was an effort put into it that was absolutely brilliant. I'll have to give her that. Or give it that, or day that. Go back into the English song where this Ollie guy came on.
Yes.
I think it was chaotic.
This is where it was like a piece of adult gay porn, I'm told.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm not going to say that. Yes. You said it, so I'll agree with you. All right. But this is where you make the comparison, say, between, we're talking about two different sexualities.
Yes.
But you look at the English song and you say, right, that's a disaster. You look at the Irish song and you look at the creativity in it and you say that was a brilliant performance.
Yeah.
And you look at the other ones that particular night. I saw it on Tuesday night, some of the songs inside, and they were absolutely fantastic. Mm. Now, Paul Lafford said that when he was there, it was just out of this world. Last night, the pyrotechnics weren't as much as what they were on Tuesday night, but there was different songs that we said we would like to see going forward. My wife is very good to pick out the singers inside, and she got 7 out of the 10 right. Which was, you know, she looked, but she was lost in Israel, you know. She just said, I don't think Israel would make it, just because of the
controversy.
Because of the controversy. Oh. And I was amazed with it as well. I think it was the first country to...
Are you surprised? Let's stay with Bambi Thug for a moment. Are you surprised with the amount of people coming out and saying she shouldn't have been chosen, they shouldn't have been chosen as an entry?
No,
it shouldn't be about her sexuality.
No.
They're concerned about the imagery. No?
No, I'm not. To be quite honest, as you look at it's artistry.
Okay.
She's a gothic mixture between hard metal and or metal rock and gothic or whatever else she likes to call it. I think that's
good luck with pigeonholing or fair play to you for even trying. Mark, what are you a Eurovision?
No, person? No, absolutely not. No, I think I agree with Pat. It shouldn't be the Eurovision Song Contest. It's the Eurovision Show Contest. I mean, it is. I mean, if you look back at some of the ones like was that Lordi, was it those crowd as well? I mean, it was very very
people
different.
People with the angle grinders and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think look. Since when? Music has never been conservative, really. I mean, I think music of our parents' generation we always considered conservative. Music of our current generation, we kind of go, well, and I'm now older now, obviously, then. Mm. So, but I mean, it's never been. Like, you think back in the day, like I don't know if it's quite strange, I was a bit of a metalhead when I was growing up.
No surprise to me.
Surprise to me too. I wouldn't have mentioned it otherwise.
But I mean, I really enjoyed that music, and I kind of went through the phase of that. Okay, things like Pink Floyd is still what I enjoy, but not metal. But like, if you look at it, I mean, the controversy of my generation, the Sex Pistols and such, and those which were there,
punk and the
metalheads and that. So. Music is music. I mean, music is controversial. I mean, it always is, probably always will be. And music is there to talk about some very, you know, it's what's important to people at the times. And it's always, I mean, music is always creating a narrative, pro, anti, whatever you want to do it. So, I mean, you look back and say, okay, classical music, I mean, you know, then you come back, you know, different things, you know, the Lyric FM, people love that. But I think, I mean, music should be controversial. I mean, you know, it's an expression. It's an art form
and
an expression.
Have you seen the piece?
I did. Yeah. Actually, do you know what? I actually quite like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think from my point of view, I like it. I think it is the as Pat said, I mean, the performance is outstanding. Okay.
And just quickly then, where Israel is concerned, do you think Israel should have been part of this? Do you think politics plays a part? Should it be allowed to?
No, well, I think it should have been a thing taken by the European Broadcasting Union. They didn't stand up enough to do what they wanted should do. I think it's really unfair.
Well, they had set a precedent with Russia, you see.
Yeah, but I think what they're saying is that Russia invaded Ukraine, but Israel didn't. I mean, we're talking semantics here, I think. So, but I think it's really unfair. It's really unfair that people pressure on individual artists, be it that, and the same thing happens in sport where they say, oh, it's up to the union or the organising authority to decide what it is. You shouldn't be up to the individual. Like 20-year-olds making decisions like this is not fair.
Yeah, all right. Alison, what about you? Are you a Eurovision fan?
No, definitely not. No interest. I haven't watched any of it.
Have you seen the piece?
No, I read some of the lyrics of the song. But no, I've no interest in it. I've read some bits about Bambi Thug. I've no real interest in her, to be honest. I think there's a shock value, which I think is kind of uber boring to a degree. It's kind of so done. They're just trying to be so outlandish that it's just kind of like, oh, God, here we go. And with Conchita, with all of that, it's gone down that road over the last decade or so. And I just find that really boring. Like when we were kids, we would have watched it and hoped, you know, Ireland would win. And I suppose the most standout moment for me in Eurovision was Riverdance. And I'm really hoping we don't win. We'll have to fund and pay for this and host it next year. There's a huge amount of financial, a huge financial side
to
this.
They tell me that that will be more than made up for in what you'd gain where tourism is concerned, because it's a spotlight on the country, I suppose, Alison. So I don't know.
Well, I suppose, you know. Look, where would you put people? We don't seem to have the accommodation for them. So if we don't have the infrastructure.
Here we go again.
You know, just say it how it is, Fran.
Of course.
Fran, you see, she was born.
Yes,
she was eventually diagnosed as an ADHD.
All right.
Right.
Okay.
You know, if that happened, say, when I was young, there was a bold child.
Right.
Right. But the person that is that is diagnosed now as ADHD, they're very clever. And this girl, or this person, Bambi Thug, is a very, very clever young person in the sense that she has written a lot of songs. And I haven't noticed her until suddenly she came on the Irish version of the Eurovision Song Contest Selection Committee or whatever the case may be.
I never heard of it.
You know, she probably wouldn't be a band that you'd put in, say, for a wedding or whatever the case may be, like yourself, you know what I mean? Because Crown the Witch wouldn't be a nice song to have inside there.
Somebody said to me during the week, you couldn't do the slosh to that.
You couldn't, no.
Sure,
you know. She credits, taking drugs as part of her creativity, and she goes into this trance and casts spells on herself, and this is how she makes her music.
You're not impressed with it. I know by your face you're not impressed by that, Alison.
I know, and I don't think my face is in any way
but I think all you got to go back, I think the entire generation of music creators in the 60s and 70s
except Frank.
And I'm not denying the fact that she's probably highly intelligent, look at Sigmund Freud. You know, he would credit a huge amount of his psychology to taking cocaine, and different. So horses for courses. But I do think there's a lot of it that is quite demonic.
And does that worry you?
Well, you know, we can put that off as theatrical and this and that, but we're starting to be kind of pushed, all that's been pushed upon us too, and we're not allowed, you know, like you see the rosary this weekend, and you know, different rosaries. There was a rosary in Limerick there a couple of months ago, and the Social Democrats candidate that is running for the mayor of Limerick, she called the guards. She videoed them all. Like that, you know, I think the problem is we're not really allowed to practice, you know, our own Christianity or Catholicism.
I think everything is become, I mean, everything has become, you can't do anything.
You can't do anything.
It doesn't matter. I think you should be allowed. I mean, I don't think it necessarily the whole thing demonic is being pushed on us. It's just there. But people are giving out about it. And then they're giving out about the rosaries and that. I mean, people seem to give out about anything that even slightly.
Well, they're waiting to be offended.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I think there are. Yeah. I honestly believe there are people who get up in the morning and the first thing they have to do is, what am I going to be offended by now?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go on to, I think, back to the well, keyboard that, warriors. That's
not
and that's it.
That's not today nor yesterday, because I remember Gay Byrne made that very statement all those years ago. He said people are waiting to be offended.
But which I thought actually very surprising. Let's go back to the Israel thing.
Yes.
What I find really surprising is that it would appear now they're second favourites. And that Italy, which they shouldn't have done, they released their figures in relation to their voting, and 39% of the vote, of the actual call-in vote, was for Israel.
Now, what is that saying to you? Is that the quality of the song, or is this some sort of political statement?
I think there's an element of political statement here, but what I find is interesting is that there seems to be such an anti. I mean, you would appear that there's such an anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian rhetoric. And I would have thought something like...
Well, that wasn't reflected
in
the vote.
No, but I would have thought something like the Eurovision, which would be quite a, I suppose, a liberal, if you want to call it, a kind of a woke or whatever, I don't know what the description would be, but they would be, generally speaking, who would be people who watch that might be of the lean towards that. But I just find it really fascinating that it's not reflected.
Some commentators are now questioning the voting at this point, because they're so shocked.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, no, we can have a conspiracy theory now, of course. And we should start one here at Tip FM.
It could be a bit like, do you remember Michael Healy-Ray making all the calls in The Doll at the time, say? There could be something like that going on.
You never know.
The thing about it is, it could be a protest against the protesters.
An anti-protest protest.
Yeah, it could be. Because
I got no sleep last night, Pat. Don't be confusing me even more. Let me take a break. We'll be back with the final portion of our panel in just a moment.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter or email tiptoday@tipfm.com. If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call Tip Today on 1-800-938-007.
And welcome back to our Friday panel, and Pat's and Alison and Mark with us. During the week, we were speaking about the fact that 500 public square rosary rallies will take place across Ireland tomorrow to commemorate the 107th anniversary of the first Marian apparition at Fatima on May 13th, 1917. And we got a huge reaction to Jimmy Ryan speaking to me about this. And can I start with you, Alison, on it? The place for the rosary now in 2014, because what it triggered was a lot of people having memories of the family rosary and all the trimmings of the rosary. So, I mean, are you surprised that there's a huge interest in this?
I think there's a bit of a resurgence again. And I think it's lovely. You know, like, I think, say, it's not causing any harm to anybody. And, like, I didn't realise, I didn't know this was happening, and I only looked it up last night. And one of the comments on your own Facebook page was that every Thursday night in Ballymacarbery, they do a rosary at the shrine. And I was like, God, I must, you know, some night I'm passing, because obviously tomorrow I'll be working, so I can't go to the one in Clonmel. But I think there's, say, so many people now only equate the church with negative now, that it is nice to see a positive, because there was a positive. You know, I know there was a lot of negative, but there is a positive out of it too. And an awful lot of people have a faith, and I think that faith gets an awful lot of people through. And whatever works for you, you know, each to their own.
Yeah.
And I think it is very important.
And these people are at pains to say there's no priests invited along. This is secular.
Yes.
This is secular. These are people rising up themselves and organising these events.
Well, and I think with the way the church is going, we're not going to have too many priests.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, people are kind of maybe doing it for themselves. And I think people get great solace in it. And, you know, I looked at one actually last night, a rosary rally on Slemish Mountain in County Antrim. That was where St. Patrick had been captured and was tending to the sheep. And it was lovely. And the wind was blowing wild and all these people kneeling, praying. There was something quite powerful
atmospheric,
about it.
Yeah. And the mantra-like feel of the repetition as well.
Yes,
That gives solace to people.
It does.
What were you saying about...
I think Ireland... I mean, I'm not religious at all. I mean, I don't attend Mass or anything like that. But I think Ireland kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater to a certain extent. I think there's a lot of good that came from the Catholic Church, and there was a lot of bad. But I think Ireland just said, we're just going to turn our back completely on it. I was in Malta recently, and I was staggered. I mean, I commented to Adrian, I said, I mean, if this had been in Ireland, these people would be pillared. I mean, there was a guy, we were walking down the street, and a lot of the little corners, they have these niches where they have like a Virgin Mary, or they have other different things. And we were just walking down the street, and, you know, and a guy kneels in front of one of these and says a prayer. And I was kind of going, do you know, if that wouldn't happen in Ireland, I don't think anymore, where they have, you would see it as, and this was, no one batted an eye.
Right. No,
it was not a thing. And, you know, we watched some of the churches. I mean, they're incredible churches. I mean, the artwork in them and the ceiling, and that, I mean, absolutely fantastic. But the number of them. And then there was people in them, and you walk in and people, and what really kind of struck me was, it wasn't just what you would expect. Older people are in there. There was all ages. And at lunchtime, you'd see people go into a church and they'd sit down. I know, as we were casting, I mean, you can't miss them. I mean, there's hundreds of churches seems to be in Valletta. But it seems to be they have maintained a connection, obviously, with their religion, and no one bats an eyelid. In Ireland here, I mean, I think you only just told me there about the Social Democrats who took a photograph and called the guard. That's outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, surely you should be allowed to practice your faith, whatever that is, in an open environment without being, you know, pillared by someone else or being, oh, look at them. I think it's lovely that, I mean, at home, I didn't even know the rosary, or at home, you know, we never practiced it or anything like that. But I do remember in Kinsale, the May procession.
Yes, yeah.
In the town. Yeah. So that's stopped now because apparently you can't have that either now or anything.
Yeah.
And the number of places I've been, you know, travelled to, and they're setting up for the May procession, and then certainly in Valletta, yes. they were getting the statues ready in some of the churches. And you're kind of going, look, why can't you? I mean,
you're probably too young to remember the May procession around the convent grounds.
Yeah, I don't remember it.
You're very young. Like,
I'm only a baby.
They were incredible occasions. Like thousands of people out, you know. Pat, your thoughts on this, the rallies for the rosary.
Well, first of all, I can remember back, I'm old enough to remember back when the rosary was said in our house. And it was a regular occurrence every night. After the news.
With the trimmings. Okay.
The television turned off. You knelt down on the kitchen floor and you said the rosary. You had a decade of rosary to say, or whatever the case may be. And that went on for most of my young life, I'll put it that way, until I left the nest. But I'll always remember that the fear of the Catholic Church. We had a God-given fear. We were a fear of we'd done something wrong. We had to confess it. And I'll tell you a story. I always remember that I was coming home. I went to school in Mullinahone. I was from the parish of Drangan. And I had done my secondary school in Mullinahone. There was a technical school there. And I was coming back and we robbed the parish priest's orchard. And we took a couple of apples out. It was a shame, yeah. But anyway, that was about a Monday or a Tuesday. And my father found out because the lady inside in the house, the parish housekeeper, was seen, and she must have copped who I was. And she told my father, I got the word out to my father anyway. So the father heard it on the Friday, and all hell broke loose inside in the house. And he said, right, he said, tomorrow morning, now, tomorrow is Saturday, which was confession day, down to the church, which we had to go to Drangan, to our parish church. So I went down to the parish church anyway, and I was inside, and he was there as well to make sure I went in. So I went in first anyway, and I was praying, I was looking at the thing, I said, I'm going to get executed inside here. So, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Yes, he said, I stole some apples from the priest's orchard. Right, says he. He said, that's serious, he said. So he said that a full rosary.
A full rosary.
A full rosary.
That was your penance.
That was my penance. So anyway, he just sat down and he said, by the way, says he, was it the CC's orchard you robbed? No, says I, it was the PP in Mullinahone. Oh, in that case, he said, a decade of the rosary.
It wasn't as serious.
But it wasn't as serious. Well, I tell you another, just when I was going away, he said, by the way, he said, did you see any Bramley apples inside in his orchard? I said, he had two trees. Three Hail Marys, because he told me he had none. So when I came out, the father went in.
Yeah.
So I had to meet three Hail Marys, said, and the father had his rosary beads, and he came back out from the thing anyway. And I saw him taking out the rosary beads, and he counting through it. And he went through a decade. So we were going back to the car anyway, and the father said to me, he says, "Well," says he, "what penance did you get?" I said, "I got 3 Hail Marys." I said, "You got a decade." And he said, "You didn't tell him everything," he said. "I bet you didn't tell him about the apples." Well, I said, "I put it this way to you. Why you got 10, I said. He got more information from me than he got from you."
Oh, they were innocent times. They were innocent times. Yeah. Have you an issue about Christian tradition being diluted in some way, Alison? Do you think, is that what we're looking to in the future?
It is being diluted, I suppose. More a disappointment than, an issue. But, because I do, look, I would consider myself to have a strong faith, and I don't go to Mass very often. Like, I would go at Christmas, I would go maybe at Easter, and I bring my son, and he actually loves it.
Does he?
He does. Yeah. And we talk about the baby Jesus an awful lot in our house. But I just, when I think back of when we were kids and doing the rosary, and, I just thought there's something very honest about it, and, say, heartwarming. Regardless of whether you're a big believer or not, I think there's great comfort. And I do think, I think obviously with everything that went on in the church, it has diluted it massively. Mm. And it's always, whenever anything is mentioned about the Catholic Church, it's always a stone to beat the Catholic Church with. But there was such good elements. And I think the element of fear, to a degree, was quite a good thing, because we behaved ourselves. We were a better society, And
some of the fear was taken to the limit, though.
Completely. And I agree with that. And to be honest, a lot of that would have been before my time.
Yeah,
I'm more talking about my own time. But, there was, now I suppose kids... If everyone used to have their communion. Now it's kind of, they don't.
But when you see the atheist, Richard Dawkins, coming out and saying, but he'd see himself as a cultural Christian in some ways.
I can't understand the logic of that. I mean,
I think it's the pomp and ceremony. And it's like your own case that, you love the churches. I mean, I love churches. I love graveyards, for God's sake. I love to wander around graveyards.
Myself and Adrian, we'd have a tradition. So we go to a new town or something like that. And you go and light a
visit a church.
Yeah. I don't go into church at home at all. But we just have this thing, we like to go and see the church and light a candle. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know why I do it. It's one of those things. But I am more of a traditionalist. I think it's sad to see the dilution of Ireland being a kind of a Christian nation. I think it's sad to see it.
And you think that's absolutely happening.
All you have to see is, all you have to see is that a TD, a representative who took a photograph and called the guards
because a group were praying.
What's happening is that you can't express, no matter what you are, you can't express your particular individuality in whichever form. I mean, I think, yes, we should be open to, if someone wants to have a different religion's parade is, if they have enough people who want to do it, then fine. But I think it's sad to see the loss of some of the great traditions that we've had.
Yes, Pat.
When we were talking there about, Alison just mentioned about the lack of priests inside the church. I was at an ordination in Tipperary Town last Sunday week, and where my wife's nephew was ordained a deacon, a young man in his 40s, early 40s, young man went through the whole thing and will be ordained a priest eventually, probably at the end of the year or whatever it is. But it was great to see, the church was packed, it was great to see the amount of, the pomp and the glory that was inside in it, but it was great to see it. We don't see ordinations that often, And I would safely say that look at the rosary and the few prayers that we say, that maybe we might, after this program is over, we'll take Mark out for Friday prayers and we'll convert him somewhere along the line.
Funny enough, a listener on to say, I'm a survivor of religious and state abuse, but my faith has never been taken from me. I blame my abusers, not my church. It's an interesting one.
That's an incredible distinction. Yeah. For that distinction is quite an incredible distinction to have. And I think maybe the country as a whole should have more of that distinction.
That happens in every bucket.
Yes.
Interesting. Before I let you go, can we just talk about sunbeds? Because one of the authors of a letter to dear Phil this week shared her concern that her daughter has a growing sunbed habit. So I think she used the sunbed initially for some sort of a school get together or something, and now addicted to it and using it all of the time. Does that concern you that a young person, Alison, would
completely would have done it? And the statistics on the increase over the last, say, 6 or 8 months.
What is that about? I mean, we know the dangers.
I suppose, social media, TikTok, it's a fad. Like, to be honest, I thought they were kind of half outlawed. I'm surprised. But look, I suppose young people, they're invincible, you know, in their own heads.
Increased by 260%, you're right, in the past 6 months.
And 180% on how long it takes, how many sessions to get a tan.
Wow.
Like, it's unbelievable. But, like, look, I suppose that industry is booming. Eyelashes, eyebrows, nails.
Aesthetics, is that
aesthetics,
what they call it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I can't fathom it. You know, I can't. The cost, I don't know where people are getting the money for it, to be perfectly honest.
And is this driven by social media, you think, particularly TikTok, I suppose?
I would assume so. I'm not on TikTok.
Yeah.
But, say, it referenced TikTok. But look, it doesn't really surprise me because I see a lot of the youth and what they spend on themselves. It was never, sunbeds were a thing when I was growing up and I used them once. I remember always afraid of the goggles falling off that I'd go blind. But like,
such an innocent person.
I know.
And somebody, and I know you both have battled cancer, both Mark and Pat. And Is it annoying to see that people will put themselves in the way of that disease?
I think so. But I think, Alison, I thought it was banned. I certainly thought it was banned for under 18s.
Yeah, yes, I thought
it was supposed to be.
Therefore, why isn't it? I mean, I think there is. It is used for medical, for specific medicine. So it should be treated as a medical on prescription sort of thing, as I view it. But otherwise, I think they should ban in entirety. Sunbeds. I mean, I don't see. There is no. It is
medically
clear.
What is it? Skin conditions.
Psoriasis and some other. There's psoriasis, eczema, and there's some other things. But like, they go in and you'd use it for like, you know, a minute or something. So it's like
all right. Okay.
So you're not sitting there. But I think there should be just a general ban on sunbeds because it's proven. That
absolutely,
it can lead to melanoma.
Leanne was on to me here on the screen, and she says average sunbed user gets three times a week for 10 minutes a session, costing €50. God, as you said, where are people getting the money?
I don't know.
Is there a cost of living crisis going on? Pat, I'm missing.
We'd have to beat you off the sunbed, I'd say, Pat.
But no, friend, to be quite honest, both Mark and myself. Two fair-haired people and fair-skinned people that I say a full moon would give us a tan. But like, if you look at it in the sense that like fair-haired skin and people that have freckles or whatever, like I have, and your little marks inside in your hand, it is total suicide, I think, to be promoting sunbeds, because as you get older, as you get over 30, it's 60% of a risk of cancer.
Yeah.
Melanoma, and which is the highest proportion of skin cancer that people have. You know, I don't know, and it is banned, Mark. It is banned. It's supposed to be banned as a gas. Under 18, you can't sell, hire, or let to a person under 18 years of age. But look, these sunbeds can be inside and God knows where. And there's no regulation if they're giving it
all
to
right,
people.
All right, there I must leave it, guys. But thanks, super panel today. Really, really enjoyable. And before we go, Alison has a plug.
I do. I have a plug. Say, this Sunday, the Ardmale Heritage Society, we have a tractor run and vintage car run, leaving Ardmale, a registration from 11 a.m. at Ardmale Cemetery and arriving to Lacey's Pub probably sometime around 2, where we'll have an auction for the Ardmale Heritage Society, but we'll also have a separate auction of, we've a signed Irish rugby jersey from Joe McCarthy, and we have signed Munster jersey, signed Tipperary GAA jersey, both camogie and hurling. And I'd say the jerseys, all the money is going to the Peggy Fund. So look, support, your support will be appreciated. And if you want to bid online in relation to the jerseys, you can do it through martbids@cashelmart.
All right, well done. Thanks, Alison. And
thanks,
speaking of plugs, A Service for Life, that's happening at the Augustinian Abbey in Fezzett on this coming Sunday. And it's a very special service that Father Iggy does every year for people who have been bereaved by suicide. It's a tribute to the great Nora Butler, wonderful, wonderful lady. I was so fond of her and did so much for traditional singing. And that's happening tomorrow night at Brew Baru. And a shameless plug, I'll be in the Round Hill Bar with Muriel as well for dancing and stuff tomorrow night. That's it for me. Thanks to Alison and to Pat and to Mark. Thanks to Leanne, who produced, and the other Alison looked after our content. I will talk to you on Monday. Bye-bye.
Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. You can't beat experience. With over 50 years maintaining Peugeot cars and vans, we like to call ourselves the experts. Call Slattery's Garage for a free vehicle health check today. 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.